his lance-bearer, his shadow. That was how everybody loved Siddhartha. He delighted and made everybody happy. But Siddhartha himself was not happy. Wandering along the rosy paths of the fig garden, sitting in contemplation in the bluish shade of the grove, washing his limbs in the daily bath of atonement, offering sacrifices in the depths of the shady mango wood with complete grace of manner, beloved by all, a joy to all, there was yet no joy in his own heart. Dreams and restless thoughts came flowing to him from the river, from the twinkling stars at night, from the sun's melting rays. Dreams and a restlessness of the soul came to him, arising from the smoke of the sacrifices, emanating from the verses of the Rig Veda, trickling through from the teachings of the old Brahmins. Siddhartha had begun to feel the seeds of discontent within him. He had begun to feel that the love of his father and mother, and also the love of his friend Govinda, would not always make him happy, give him peace, satisfy and suffice him. He had begun to suspect that his worthy father and his other teachers, the wise Brahmins, had already passed on to him the bulk and best of their wisdom, that they had already poured the sum total of their knowledge into his waiting vessel, and the vessel was not full. His intellect was not satisfied. His soul was not at peace. His heart was not still. The ablutions were good, but they were water. They did not wash sins away. They did not relieve the distressed heart. The sacrifices and the supplication of the gods were excellent, but were they everything? Did the sacrifices give happiness? And what about the gods? Was it really Prajapati who had created the world? Was it not Atman, he alone, who had created it? Were not the gods' forms created, like me and you, mortal, transient? Was it therefore good and right? Was it a sensible and worthy act to offer sacrifices to the gods? To whom else should one offer sacrifices? To whom else should one pay honor, but to him, Atman, the only one? And where was Atman to be found? Where did he dwell? Where did his eternal heart beat, if not within the self, in the innermost, in the eternal which each person carries within him? But where was this self, this innermost? It was not flesh and bone. It was not thought or consciousness. That was what the wise men taught. Where, then, was it? To press towards the self, towards Atman. Was there another way that was worth seeking? Nobody showed the way. Nobody knew it. Neither his father, nor the teachers and wise men, nor the holy songs. The Brahmins and their holy books knew everything, everything. They had gone into everything. The creation of the world, the origin of speech, food, inhalation, exhalation, the arrangement of the senses, the acts of the gods. They knew a tremendous number of things. But was it worthwhile knowing all these things if they did not know the one important thing, the only important thing? Many verses of the holy books, above all the Upanishads of Samaveda, spoke of this innermost thing. It is written, "Your soul is the whole world." It says that when a man is asleep, he penetrates his innermost and dwells in Atman. There was wonderful wisdom in these verses. All the knowledge of the sages was told here in enchanting language, pure as honey collected by the bees. No, this tremendous amount of knowledge, collected and preserved by successive generations of wise Brahmins, could not be easily overlooked. But where were the Brahmins, the priests, the wise men, who were successful not only in having this most profound knowledge, but in experiencing it? Where were the initiated who, attaining Atman in sleep, could retain it in consciousness, in life, everywhere, in speech and in action? Siddhartha knew many worthy